Hey, everybody. Welcome to Full Draw Friday, brought to you by Racks Big Game Supplements. Go over to racksmineral.com and check them out for all your supplement needs for your wildlife. Austin is back this week. He's been working like a dog for the last 2 weeks. I've been fighting off a cold. If you guys listened to Monday's episode, you probably heard that a little bit. My apologies. But we're going to get into private land access this week because the last time we talked, last episode we put out was the first part of this series. We talked access on public ground. A lot of that stuff, like always, does apply to private, but you have more options for things you can do on private, way more control over how you can set your place up to have the best access possible. Because like we said, access is super high up on that, should be super high up on your priority list as far as things to do that are going to make you a successful hunter consistently. So we talked about a little bit before we got on here, started recording. As far as private land improvements go, I want to start with what you were talking about because it all starts with a plan. You might have these great ideas for things that you can do. You might want to go in and put food plots. You might want to go in and cut trails. But you also have to keep in mind how that's going to make the property hunt, how it's going to change things for that. You have to make it easier for yourself to hunt, not just better for the deer. So I'll let you kick us off talking about that and kind of what we're saying when we talk about getting that plan put together and how that can affect your access. Because a lot of guys might think, hey, I'm putting in a food plot. How's that relate to my access? Or I'm putting a stand over here by this food plot because that's where I've got it, right? So I'll let you lead off with that part of it, and then we'll get into the actual kind of improvements that you can make on the property that can also aid in your access.
No, absolutely. I mean, it sounds great. You've got a location that you want to put a food plot. You think it ought to be a great food plot, but unfortunately it's kind of right in line with your primary access into the property, mm-hmm. right? And you might not think about bumping deer after dark being a big issue, but it turns into a really big issue. So, you know, on public land, I think we talked about it on our last episode, is you've got X number of times you bump a deer until he's basically gone, right? Mm-hmm. So it's the same thing on private. That's not any different. The only difference there is you got to plan on that buck being bumped already once or twice on public compared to private. But same basic idea, the more often that you bump deer off of that property on your access, bump them off of that food plot, they're going to start becoming shy to it. You know what I mean? And if you want your property to be more of a big buck property and not just a doe magnet or a young buck magnet, those big bucks are going to be less forgiving than those does or young bucks. You know, that's the main problem that I see on a lot of properties that I've visited throughout the years is, hey, I don't understand why I no longer have big bucks on this property, right? And then you get to talking and to drive the property a lot. They use the property a lot all the time, right? There's no sanctuary. There's no left alone location. And then you get to talking about another property that is loaded with big deer, but they're never there. There's a reason for that. Those two things go hand in hand. Those big deer didn't just automatically get killed off or just vanished. You just kind of pushed them off property over time, right? So putting a good plan together not only means you want to optimize the amount of acreage that you have, right, to make it good deer habitat, bedding, transition areas, and food availability, right? You want to maximize the acreage you have, but you don't want to negatively affect your hunting in a manner that if you access it five times, you've screwed up the rest of your season. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. It's one of those things that you actually see it quite often is you go a week of hunting with poor access, deer go nocturnal, and they might not be back for a few weeks. And you might even bump them off harder than that.
If then.
Right? Yeah. If then. So I've seen it happen multiple times. Mm-hmm. So designing a plan that not only works for maximizing your acreage and providing as much food and bedding as possible for your deer, but also setting it up in a manner that you can actually hunt it is critical. Because if you can't actually hunt it, then you just kind of made a fun nocturnal property for a bunch of deer.
It's a great place to get trail camera pictures.
Yeah, you've created a place to get a bunch of trail camera pictures is essentially what you've done. So, and there's a lot of different ways to manipulate your property with improvements that you can do on private that you don't have the ability to do on public, but the basics are the same. You know what I mean? You don't want to bump deer off your property any more than you have to. And especially, you don't want to make them so food plot shy that they never show up to your food plot until midnight.
Exactly. Exactly.
Especially those big bucks,
Yep.
So you want to make them the key to a highly successful property year after year is safety. That's your number one factor. Whether you could have the prettiest, most food plot, habitat improvement, amazing piece of property, right? Or you could have just you've done nothing with it property. But the property that is manicured has way more activity on it than the property that has nothing on it. And the property that has nothing on it, those guys shoot bigger deer more often, right? It's all about safety. If the deer don't feel safe, it doesn't really honestly matter that much on what you've done with the property if they don't feel safe being there in the first place.
I think that's part of the reason you see a lot of, you see it every year, right? Especially where we're at, where there's a lot of bow season before gun season, and then it's like gun season is one weekend, right? So there's a lot of already been a lot of bow hunting pressure in places where guys bow hunt until the gun season comes around. And all these guys that are like us, that are like diehard bow hunters, right? And they're out there trying to kill these deer. If you're not doing it right, you're putting on so much pressure, you're running that deer off somewhere else. Well, then Uncle Bob comes out with his cigarette and just had the wind happens to be right for him. He climbs up in the stand the first day and he shoots your 170-inch buck that you've been watching on trail camera all year. And he drives to town with the tailgate down and he's laughing at you because he killed your deer, right? That has a lot to do with it. Uncle Bob hasn't been on the property bumping that deer all season long, right? He went out there one time. That deer, you bumped that deer onto his property, and that 170-inch buck had no idea there were even people around in that area. So that's where he decided to stay. Well, then all of a sudden, he rolls in with his 12 gauge on opening day of gun season, and bam, there's a 170-inch deer. And it's not because the property had better food on it necessarily, or even better cover for that matter. If it had just enough of both of those and a place where he could safely get water, the pressure is a big thing too. If he didn't have that, that's where he's going to be. So you see it all the time, these guys that go out and it's like, oh, how's he go out one time and he kills a big deer? Well, number one, there's some luck involved, obviously, but number two, he wasn't putting pressure on. If there's no been nobody hunting that property all year, that's probably where the buck's going to be. And you can control that pressure by setting up your property well so that your access is where it needs to be, because you don't want deer to know you were there even if you didn't see them, which is kind of something we talked about last week, right? And a big part of this that is, it's also affected by guys that are not trying, they're not trying to do too much. They're maybe trying to do too little, right? So a lot of what we see on properties that we go to is there happened to be a little bit of a clearing in this one spot, so that's where we stuck the food plot, or that's where we want to put it because it's the easiest spot to put it, right? Doesn't always mean it's the best place, whether that be for the deer, because that's the case a lot of times too. Just because that area is clear doesn't mean that's where the deer want to be. But also, if this little clearing area is right on where you need to be accessing, then let's not put the food plot there. Let's put in a little more work and put it somewhere else. It's going to make it easier to hunt, right? So we've seen that a lot over the years as well. Is some guys, yes, they're doing too much and they're putting out everything they're doing everything they can do to make it better for the deer, but they forget to make it easier to hunt. Then we have guys that are kind of the opposite end. They want to make it better for deer, but they don't want to put in any more work than they necessarily have to, right? So they're just going the easiest route. And that's not always the best way to do it, because like you're saying, you got to set up your property to where it's going to be conducive for the deer, yes. But if your overall goal is to kill them, it's got to be set up for killing them too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And like you said, not always the easy place is the best place, you know? So sometimes you got to get out there with a different piece of equipment or a chainsaw and work a little harder. You know what I mean? And I totally understand that, you know, time is a limited thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? For a lot of people, and you might not have the equipment to do it and whatnot, but most people have a chainsaw at least. Right.
Yeah.
And a way to clear brush. Cause most of the time, if you've got a tractor and you're tilling up plots, you've got brush hog, you know? Yep. So you can brush hog that up and kind of take care of all the small stemmy and tall grass and what, and things along those lines. But you know, don't hesitate to spend a little bit more time. Maybe it's a kind of thing where, hey, it's March. I need to plant a food plot right now, but that's probably not going to be the best route to take. Maybe I work on this over the summer over here in this location where it ought to be. And I start a food plot for a fall planting. And then over the winter, start establishing my perennials in that. Yep. You know what I mean? Maybe it's the kind of thing you got to think long term with these improvements. You know, everything that is habitat management and deer hunting, period, deer hunting in general. If you're not taking a patience first approach, you've already lost because you're going to drive yourself so insane that you're not going to have fun with it anymore.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's constantly wondering why something's not working, or, you know, not thinking through what it could be and trying to continually make adjustments to the approach, you know, and making it work. It's trying to that quick fix or the, you know, instant gratification kind of thing. You know, what we're doing is a long-term goal. And you've got to have that mindset of, I am setting this up to take full advantage of this in a couple of years, essentially.
Yep. Yep. And there are things you can do also once you have your plan in place and you've kind of decided, okay, this is where I want to put things, right? Or maybe it's, I have things here and I need to move them. That could be the case too. If you've already done something, it's not too late to do it the right way. It's just going to take longer than had you done it the right way to start with, right? That's something that... Not to make a sales pitch, but that's where I think the value in guys like us that do consultations for guys that don't really know how they want to do things. I think that's where the most value lies. It's saving time because if you know what you're doing from the beginning, you're going to be way ahead of the eight ball instead of way behind it, right? If you just go out there and you start doing stuff because you saw something on YouTube and it wasn't necessarily the best thing or in the right location, like I said, it's not the end of the world. But it's also going to take a lot more time to now correct that. And hopefully it wasn't a situation where you've ruined the hunting on your property for a couple years now also, right? Yeah. But that could also happen. I mean,
that where it comes down to what we were talking about, I think maybe on a couple episodes ago, is you cannot take a cut back. The moment you cut that tree's gone.
Yep.
You know? You can replant stuff, you know, hey, you planted a food plot here and maybe it should have stayed grass. That's okay. Plant more grass out there. Plant a native mix in there. You haven't lost anything. You've just lost some time.
Yeah.
Right. But if you go out and start clearing trees and making massive hinge cuts and all of this stuff, you can't just get those trees back.
Exactly.
Those are decades old trees. So. Yep. That's about the only time. That's why you have to be so careful about making a cut and make sure that it's being precise and that you have a purpose for it. You know, that's something I caution a lot when it comes to actually making cuts and just making sure that you're in the right, you have the right idea before you start widespread cutting stuff.
Yeah. It only takes ultimately a matter of minutes to cut down a 75-year-old tree, but it still takes 50 or 75 years to regrow one. So that's
absolutely
a big one where if you go in and you start doing stuff that's not well, the way you should be doing it, you could hurt that property for a long time. Yeah. But again, not to get too much sales pitch on consulting. I just think that is where a lot of the value lies. And if you're one of those guys that doesn't know, seek somebody out that, you know, that can help you with that. Because it is going to save you a lot of time and money, ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
But something I want to also kind of get into here is if you got your plan down, the things you can actually do on your property, right? So like the physical changes you can make once you've kind of got things set up, right? So it may be one of those deals where I know this stand location is going to work. The access is okay. Maybe you don't have like a creek bottom or a ditch you can walk into or the backside of a ridge. Maybe it's got a stretch where it's a little open, but everything else is rock solid on that, right? There are things you can do, whether that be mowing trails. That's one of the easiest ones. If you've got access like at our cabin property, the driveway, I can basically get all the way to one of my stands without ever touching brush. It's just grass, right? Till I hit the edge of the food plot. But even then, I can get in there with a bush hog or even just a regular mower, and I can make me a path where I'm not going to brush up against anything, because that's ultimately where they're going to smell you, right? We talked about that on the last episode. But I can go in there with literally a lawnmower and create that rock-solid access, because I know, as long as I know where my wind's blowing, right, as far as the ground scent stuff goes, rock solid. Other times, you might have to have something a little bit either heavier equipment, or even in some cases, it's going to be you have to either go a lot heavier equipment or you got to go a lot lighter equipment and hand tools, right? Like you're saying, with a saw, a little foldable saw or pruning shears or something like that, and get in there if you're going back into the timber and actually cutting out just wide enough for you to walk down to where you're not brushing up against stuff, right? That's a big one with access. If you're in one of those areas where, like I said, it opens up and the deer can see you, well, then you have a lot of different plantings that you can do for that. Whether you want to go for the long term and kind of, if you don't necessarily need it this year, but you're looking down the road and you don't want to have to plant something every year, you can go with a switchgrass. There are plenty of blends of switchgrass that get tall enough to hide you as you're walking in. It's just going to take a couple, 2-3 years to get them to that height. There's also a lot of good annuals, right, that you can go in, disc you, or not even just spray in some cases, 6-10 foot swath or whatever, plant your screening. Those are things that you can do on private ground that you can't necessarily do on public, right? So you can enhance what is already good access with some of these things.
Yeah. And thinking through strategy purposes, you know, where to place these access and whatnot. You know, if you're doing it right, you want as much deer on the interior of your property as possible, right? For bedding purposes and transition and whatnot. You want them to stay on the interior property as much as possible, which means that you want to cut out interior access as much as possible, right? You know, use the perimeter of your property as much as you can, you know, come in from the outside. If you have some roads that are that border your property, maybe you have a little access there that you just go park your truck at, just like you would a public land, right? You just park and access, and same idea. Instead of walking from the cabin down your nice road that winds through your property, instead of walking from there or driving your UTV in through there, drive around and park on the outskirt of your property, you know, and then do that short access into that stand, you know, keeping as much of your access to the perimeter and away from the high value locations as possible, knowing where deer are going to be after dark, right? In the morning, after dark, they're going to be around your food sources. So, you know, if you've got to walk past a crop field, use your screens. Like you were just talking about, like a switchgrass screen and an annual. If you want to, so there's a few properties I've got where I started a switchgrass, right? And then we backed it with an annual. That way they have screening this year while that switchgrass is next to it, establishing itself, which is going to take a couple of years to get tall enough to be to where we want to be, right? So you've got your long-term goal with a short-term fix.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yep. So, and then think about accessing it and your timing, just like we talked about, during the public land thing. And then, not shining your lights out into the field with your truck, try to be as stealthy as possible kind of situation, and staying out of your, if you, like I said, if you can set it up in a manner to stay on your perimeter as much as possible, you're going to hold deer more to your interior, and you're not going to bump them out quite as heavy as you would if you had one single trail that wind through the middle of your property. And then you're going to start, if you have that, you're going to start getting more deer that are kind of staying on your neighbor and you, kind of that fence line buck, right? Where you'd rather have that buck over here on you. You don't want him over there, but he's going to be on both sides no matter what you do. It's just the way it is. So unless you've got 10,000 acres and he's smack dab in the middle of that, like this, you
Then
know
you
what I
got him.
mean? Yeah, you got him at that point. But yeah, just kind of instead thinking through how your property lays, the easiest, most efficient route of access for you, and then making sure you're not making improvements near that are, or too many improvements near that are going to negatively affect how deer stay on your property and make it to a point where, hey, you just bumped out your 170 that was over there in that field, you're a half mile from your stand, but he was going to make his way back there, but you just bumped him out of that field because you didn't have the screen in place or anything along those lines, or you get mow, so you're leaving your scent on your tall grass the whole way in, and he walked past it and smelled it, so those are all things that you can control.
On, I was like, especially like we're talking about on private land, there's so many different ways that you can control it. There are properties that set up where they're still going to be super tough to access. You just have to do as much as you can, right? And you're maybe there's certain things you have to give up. If it's your only place to hunt and you want to go hunt it, you can do your best. Sometimes they're going to get you right, but you still have to do this stuff in order to try to be as careful as you can and give yourself as much chance as possible of killing that thing before he runs into you, right? Before you run into him.
I like what you said there, because there are some properties that some client properties of mine that I've got that are like that are, you can't really approach from the outskirts, and they get really good bedding. So even if we tried to do that, bedding cover is extremely good in those areas. So we don't want to do that. So we have a lot of center access on those particular properties, right? So what can we plant in those areas that maybe are not fall heavy food sources, right? Where the deer, that's where they're going to be eating in the fall. They're eating it during the summer. You've got really good summer nutrition to get them what they need, right? And then going into the fall, they might not be the most optimal food source in the fall. So they're just going to choose these other plots instead, right? And then you can put your screening up. And then it also comes down to how often you hunt it. I think that's where now it turns into your actual hunting strategy, is that's where you're better off sitting on the couch on less optimal days versus forcing a hunt and forcing an access, where knowing that when you access, you're probably going to be bumping some deer because it is what it is where you're at. That's your property. Knowing that means that your hunting strategy needs to be on point, and you only access it when you have optimal conditions, or your trail cameras tell you that you need to go hunt today,
Yes, the
kind
highest
of
probability
situation.
days for sure.
Yeah, so yeah, you need to choose your high probability days, and otherwise just stay off of it.
Because you're
So
doing
that's where
way
it
more
just.
harm than you are good at that point.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's where, it's not just about, making it goes right back to making them feel safe, honestly. So you give them what they need in a manner, but you've got to work with your property as much as possible.
I got one more thing I want to hit on before we get out of here. Before we get to that, don't forget about our other partner on Full Draw Friday. That is Rodney Hawkins at RG Outdoors and Midwest Farm and Land Company. He's got Tacticam trail cameras. He's got Radix hunting products. He's got e-bikes. He's got, I believe, Grandpa Ray Outdoor Seed now. He's working on new stuff all the time. I think he even just got lawn furniture in at RG Outdoors. So if you guys are in Southern Illinois, go check that out. He's at RG Outdoors on Facebook. And then Midwest Farm and Land, if you guys are wanting a piece of property in the Midwest to do all these kind of things that we're talking about, if you're in the market, get a hold of him. He just listed one in our close to our home county today. Combination property, got some income on it from cash rent. It's got quite a bit of timber on it. They're listing stuff like that all the time. He also does residential stuff and things like that. For any info on any of that, give him a call at 618-925-3153. And I nailed that phone number, by the way. Nice. I struggled with that on Monday's episode. He'll forgive me, I'm sure. But the last thing I want to get into is, because we're kind of running low on time here, I don't want the storms to come in and blow us away. I want to talk about one of the biggest, I think, advantages you have on private land over public land, and we've hit on a little bit. you know, excuse me, I'll get rid of that in a second. You know on your private property where the good access is, right? And you know on public access or public land where the good access is. On private land, you're the only one using it. On public land, you might know where that rock solid access is, and you use that every time, and you know that you're not the one bumping that deer. But like we talked about last week, that doesn't mean Joe Blow's not coming in there and pissing that all away for you because he went to the wrong place. Whereas on the private ground, you can use that same rock solid access every time. You don't have to deviate from it as long as it's working. Now, that's a double-edged sword too, because it might be rock solid this year, but depending on, like you said, what improvements you make, if you make some a little too close to it or whatever changes you might make to that property, the deer are going to adjust as you probably want them to. But if you do something that changes them just enough, they might start intercepting your access, right? Or if there's even a crop rotation. So maybe you got deer, we've seen bucks over the years that prefer a corn over a bean, right? Like they'll go to a cornfield on one end of the property as long as they can until they have to go to the beans, right? Or vice versa. And then every year those fields will switch, right? Because of crop rotations. So if it's something like that, that could change too where they're going. So your access that was good the year before might not be good the next year. So it's almost going to sound contradicting, but do what you know works until it doesn't, right? And then adjust. Yep. And you can do that on private land because no one else should be in there messing that up for you, right? So where public, you might know where you're going, and you can do that every time, but it might not make a difference if the wrong guy comes in and messes that all up. On private, as long as you know what you're doing and what's working for you, stick with what's working, right? And the deer will let you know when it doesn't work anymore. You know, you may not run up face-to-face with them. They might not smell you. You might not see them run off. But it's going to be those things we were talking about where if you have bad access, right, that buck's not going to be daylighting anymore. He's moved off. Now you're only getting pictures of him at night. You had pictures of him for 3 out of 5 days, and now you haven't seen him again for 2 weeks, right? Something probably happened when you went in there, even if you didn't see him from the stand. Pay attention to all those things, even if you think you have good access, because if they change, hey, maybe that's a sign I need to figure something else out, right?
Yeah, you know, you may not always know you've got bad access, but there will be signs.
Mm-hmm.
There will be signs.
Yep.
They'll let you know.
Yep.
You know, just like that tree stand that's been there for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And that deer trail goes right around it.
Yep.
Into the brush. I can't even count the number of times I've seen that where you're just on a beeline on this trail and it is heavy. Then all of a sudden the trail just kind of withers away and completely diverts, mm-hmm. right? And then you walk up a bit, you know, you go about 100 yards, 50 to 100 yards, and you tree stand. And then you continue, and then that trail comes back and then continues.
Yep.
Completely diverts around the brush and around a terrain feature to where if you're sitting in that tree stand, you have no idea that deer just walked that direction. Also, they have the wind in their favor the whole time that they know that you're up there, mm-hmm. right? So what they're going to do is that's why you get that trail camera picture 30 minutes or an hour after dark after you left the tree. But every time you're not in the tree, he's there right at dusk and shooting light, right? It's because what he's doing is he's winding you in the back, and he's just hanging out till you leave after dark, and then he's going up to your food plot afterwards. You know, so they've figured out where you're at because you haven't been unpredictable. You've been very predictable, and they've just figured it out. And then they have made adjustments to their patterns of use and figured out how to where they need to be to sense danger in that stand, right? And every time they sense it, they make certain adjustments. And if they don't sense anything up there, they just continue with what they were doing.
Yep. And that's the thing. If they want to do something bad enough, they won't always just run away or leave entirely, right? They might just go around or use a different route, and you never see them. You never know when they're there. You said there will be signs. Sometimes there won't be sign, right? Like all the,
Yeah, exactly. There will be no sign anymore.
you've got rubs and scrapes opened up everywhere, and you're like, man, this is the place. I'm where I need to be. Like, I've hit it at the right time. You go in there two or three times and don't see any deer. And then the fourth time you go in there, it's like, gosh, all the scrapes are closed up and there's no new rubs or anything. It's like, well, there's your sign.
There's your sign. Exactly. That's exactly the case. Is that is your sign that something is wrong, is that there is no longer sign.
Yes. And something is very likely you in a lot of cases.
Yeah, very, very likely, right? Absolutely.
Well, I think that's a good place to shut it down for the private access side. Like we said last time we talked, we're definitely going to revisit access because it is such a big thing that we're definitely going to have to
Oh,
talk
yeah.
about it during season two. But it's a good one to hit on now, still early in the summer. I mean, it's past the middle of May now, so we're marching right towards October. But it's something that you need to know now because you can set yourself up for success this season if you know these things, right? And you can set your property up the way it needs to be. Plant those annual plantings, mow those trails, spray them, whatever you got to do to get it done. But we'll definitely revisit this. I appreciate everybody for tuning in to this series, and hopefully you guys are enjoying these that we're kind of putting out through the off season. This one's a kind of a hybrid because we did talk about some management stuff along with the strategy, but
Yeah.
the next series will probably go a little bit more management, and then we'll go back to another strategy series after that, and we'll just keep trucking on towards mid-September and October.
That sounds like a plan to me.
All right. Well, see you guys. Thanks for watching. Again, make sure you hit up our partners. Let them know we sent you over there. Hit the subscribe button if you're on YouTube. Hit follow if you're anywhere else. Leave us a review. That really helps as well. And comments on YouTube. Also, if you guys think we missed something or you've got something to share that might make me a better hunter or Austin, absolutely leave it in the comments for us. So,
Yeah.
other than that, we'll see you guys on Monday's episode. And then hopefully, me and Austin will see you guys again next week.
All right.